Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the ever awesome Jonathan Strickland.
My dogs are barking.
Your dog is barking.
That's true. My dog is barking. Like, he started barking just as we hit record, so we may have some Tybalt input in this episode.
Well, that's, you know, I always appreciate Tybalt's opinion, so.
Yeah, he's got some very strong opinions about some of these stories that we're going to be covering today. You know, I guess I just have a dog who's really tapped into geek culture.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense because you're tapped into geek culture.
More or less, and sometimes.
Sometimes. And animals, you know, animals resemble their owners, so, or vice versa, so.
Yeah. So, as always, we figured we'd start off by chatting a little bit about stuff that we have, you know, kind of experienced in the geek sphere over the last week. You want me to go first? Or you want to go first, Ariel?
You can go first.
I can go first. Okay. So, I binged Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the series, on Amazon. I saw that it was on. I was like, I'll check this out. And I watched the whole thing, and I don't know if I liked it.
See, usually when you say I binged something and I watched the whole thing over a week, it means that you loved it and you couldn't put it down.
I found it really interesting, but it's hard to kind of categorize Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's certainly got comedic elements to it. It's got like a lot of comedy woven in there, but it's kind of like sly, wry comedy, not the kind of comedy that makes you laugh out loud most of the time. There's a couple of moments in a couple of episodes, sometimes provided by a guest star like John Turturro or Ron Perlman. They did moments that made me kind of actually chuckle, but otherwise it tended to be kind of a treatment on the pitfalls of relationships, right? Because the whole premise of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the series, if you're not familiar, is that these two people have both interviewed with this mysterious company that operates essentially a spy service. And each of them gets hired to become a spy, and then they're paired together without ever having met each other before. And they're given the aliases John and Jane Smith. And the premise of the series as it goes on is that these two people who had no previous connection start to make a connection with one another while also trying to fulfill these various jobs that they're given by the agency. And it's entertaining, but it gets super dark when it starts treating like the relationship issues, because these are two people who are already kind of messed up in their own ways. Like the Jane has got sociopathic tendencies, and John is sort of in arrested development in a way. He's a mama's boy.
Well, and if he was in arrested development, that would be a much funnier show.
Yeah, it was not like that. So anyway, I watched the whole series. It ends on sort of a cliffhanger. Like, no spoilers, but it ends in such a way where you question whether there could be a season two. Maybe there will be, but they're going to have some splaining to do. And I've got a terrible feeling that if they do a season two, as almost a kind of screw you to the audience, they won't explain anything.
Or at least not right away.
But we'll see. Yeah. So, like, did you ever watch Sherlock, Ariel?
The
Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yes, I did,
So you might remember in Sherlock, there's obviously the reference to Reichenbach Falls, where Sherlock falls off a building and appears to die. Mm-hmm. And then the next season he comes back, and everyone thinks they have an explanation for how he survived. But at the end of that episode, you still don't have an actual answer as to how he survived. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm afraid they're going to do with Mr. and Mrs. Smith if it gets a second season. Anyway, I watched that. I also watched The most recent episode of Night Court, which as we know, has the actor who played Raj in The Big Bang Theory. He was a guest star on that episode. I would say it's one of the stronger episodes of Night Court that I've seen. Still feels like a sitcom out of time. It still feels like it belongs well into the early 90s. But it was, I think, a better episode than a lot of the other ones. And I finally watched the horror comedy film Freaky, which is the play off of like Freaky Friday. It was originally called Freaky Friday the 13th, where a high school young woman and an aging serial killer swap bodies. Vince Vaughn plays the aging serial killer. I gotta say, pretty entertaining. Directed by the same guy who directed the Happy Death Day movies. And of course, we've heard rumors of there potentially being a Happy Death Day Freaky crossover in the future, which would just be like so much meta, it would melt my brain. Anyway, that was what I experienced this week. Still haven't watched a second episode of True Detective season 4. Still haven't gotten there yet.
So I also watched Night Court. I am not caught up, but I did watch the episode with Kunal Nair guest starring in it. And I agree with you. I feel like a lot of the jokes landed better. They felt some of the jokes felt very forced and some felt very natural. And once it felt natural, I laughed a lot. And Kunal Nair is a great actor. And Melissa Rauch, I think is
Rauch.
Her name? Yeah. Rauch is a great actress. I feel like the fault in the show, it does feel out of time. And I feel like part of it is like their characters oftentimes are unbelievable as human beings. Like, like Kunal Nair's character, Raj's character, he played it very well, but it was, he played a fashion designer during Fashion Week, but he was so out there that it was hard to believe that that was a real human. I don't know if that makes sense.
I mean, yeah, Night Court has always featured cartoonish characters, right? Like, I always think of Brent Spiner's character on the original run of Night Court, where he plays like the hillbilly character who something terrible has always happened to his family. Like, hello, honor, it's us. That character. So that's kind of a staple for Night Court.
Yeah.
So I totally get it. Like, anytime you're gonna have a Night Court episode, most of the guest appearances or incidental characters are going to come across as being cartoon, because that's Night Court.
Yeah. That episode also had Jennifer Lewis in it, who has done many prolific things, but I think most people would probably know her as the grandma in Black-ish. She's phenomenal. So she was also great. I also finished the season 1 of Percy Jackson. I say that there's only one season of it out right now, but I suspect there'll be a second. And I loved the ending. I feel like if Percy Jackson had been out when I was a child, I might have been more into that than Peter Pan, because it really left me with this feeling of wonder, like I could be the kid of a Greek god. But it also was more true to Greek mythology than like Disney's Hercules was, which is not a hard thing to do.
Not a high bar.
Yeah. Although I will say, I don't think this is a spoiler. And if it is, we'll beep it out. In the last episode, one of the characters says that they're being taken to Disney World as a part of their foray into the human side of the world of things. And doesn't understand what it is. And she's like, what do I need to do? And Percy's like, you just need to be a kid. I'm like, Disney, way to put a Disney commercial in your own Disney show.
Yeah. Right. I heard you like Disney, so I put Disney in your Disney.
But I thought, you know, the show was very well done. I watched it because my one of my nephews is super into Greek mythology. And I was too as a kid. Like, it's not super kid friendly, but it is super kid interesting, I would say. A lot
sure.
of it.
I mean, like you got to think about some of the stuff that came out when we grew up. I think as we get turned into adults, we start to misjudge what kids are capable of watching. Because when I look back at the stuff I watched as a kid, I'm like, You know what? I don't give kids enough credit because I turned out okay. And look at some of the stuff I watched. Oh,
that's true. I mean, it's very true. Some of it maybe is stuff we shouldn't have watched as kids. That's a whole conversation in and of itself. You know, but some of it is stuff that like we can actually, depending on the child's maturity, they can comprehend and understand the right and the wrong in a situation. Because Greek gods certainly did some wrong stuff in the mythology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, more often they did wrong stuff than they did right stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, also there's stuff I watched as a kid that when I watch now, I'm like, I watched that as a kid? Because it just went over my head. That being said, I didn't think I would like Percy Jackson. I actually really enjoyed it. I look forward to a second season. I will watch it. You know, it helps that there were so many, like, hard-hitting guest stars in the show. Just a really phenomenal cast. And, you know, I'm still watching season one of True Detective. I know you haven't watched season three and you've only watched part of season two and you've only watched the beginning of season four, but does it keep like a supernatural bent through the anthology series?
No, no, I can say that. So season one has hints of the supernatural, although you can, I don't want to spoil it for you, but you're often left wondering, is there actual supernatural stuff going on, or is it merely that the perception of all these characters is such that they can't be certain, right?
Yeah, I know enough about season one to know that that's like I know who the villain is.
Yeah, so season two, there's no supernatural element to it. Like it's not supernatural. It's more like politics and organized crime. That's kind of the element for season two, which honestly at first I kind of liked because I felt that it was more grounded until you get halfway through the season when it just goes bonkers. And then I did watch all of season two more or less. I think I scrubbed through a couple of episodes toward the end because I just was losing patience with it, but I wanted to see like the really important scenes. So I did that. Did not watch season three at all. Don't know anything about it really. Season four, from what I've heard, I've only seen the first episode, but from what I've heard, season four, it does go back to that supernatural element that season one had, but cranks it up. Like in that first episode of season four, if there's not something supernatural going on, I don't understand what the reasoning could be for some of the stuff that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like, it's like, it doesn't make sense for this to happen in the real world. So there has to be a supernatural element.
The trailer gave me like a very Mountains of Madness sort of a vibe.
No, it's got a very Lovecraftian kind of feel, but I mean, that's because again, it's also touching on the work of Robert Chambers, who was a contemporary of H.P. Lovecraft's.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the first and the fourth episodes, maybe not the second and the third.
Yeah, seasons. First and fourth seasons, yes. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Which is a little sad to say because, like, I was talking with Tony, who has watched both some of Fargo season one with me and some of and has watched what we've seen of True Detective season one with me. He's not big into, like, police procedural shows in general. But he likes True Detective better than Fargo because True Detective, even though the situation seems maybe possible supernatural as opposed to just people doing crappy stuff, the characters feel more real, but it is that supernatural bent that I think is also keeping him interested. So
the characters feel more real, except I don't think McConaughey seems real. He's great. He's fantastic. He's doing an amazing performance. He does not seem like a real person. He seems like the kind of person a writer creates. He doesn't seem like someone you would actually encounter.
He seems like the protagonist of a Cthulian novel. Like he's already lost his mind slightly. So I get that. But I find his performance believable in the character that he's playing. Whereas like Fargo, the performances are phenomenal. The actors are great, but they are all kind of like characters instead of people. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Some of them are people, but it is, you know, a Coen style of zany dryness, dry zaniness. There we go. It's a little harder to put into the real world, even though it could be, because they're you know, stereotypes and stuff. So that's what I've I've been watching. I mean, I'm gonna be real honest, like, we're going through the shows that I've started keeping a list of all the shows that we say we want to watch and all the movies that we say we want to watch. So when we hit a point where we're like, what do we want to watch? I start, like, I pull a chunk of that list up. I'm like, let's pick one of these. There's a bunch of stuff missing from it. It's a work in progress, but that's where we are now. While I wait for The Last Airbender to come out, while I wait for Life and Beth season 2 to come out, which is a wonderful show. There's a couple other shows that are coming out in February, Shogun, which we're going to talk about. And like The Bear season 3 just started filming. So that's a ways away, but I'm looking forward to it. So yeah, I'm just biding time right now.
Sure. Well, and I'm just the kind of person who I have to be in the right mental space to watch something new. Mm-hmm. And I'm far more likely, I'm one of those folks who's really guilty of going back and watching something I've seen a billion times before rather than committing to a new thing.
There's a comfort in that. And also there's a lack of commitment. You don't have to commit time, because if you need to stop in the middle of it, you've already seen it.
Yeah. Or even just have it go while you're no longer paying direct attention to it. Yeah. All right. Well,
sorry, one more thing. We did try to watch Spider-Man Across the Universe over the weekend, but we had to stop it because I got a last minute call to be on set for something, and I had to prepare for that. So that will be the next geeky thing that I watch probably this weekend.
Yeah. I'm not sure what will be the next thing for me. It'll largely depend upon my schedule coming up over the next few days. Mm-hmm. Got a medical procedure I get to have on Monday, so that's always going to be fun. So we'll see. Maybe Tuesday I'll just be like, all right, I don't want to do anything else except watch like stuff that I've been missing out on.
Yeah.
But that kind of wraps up what we've been into recently. Now, why don't we jump on over to 30 seconds or less?
Sounds good. And you start this week.
Yep, here we go. Universal has announced that the next Jurassic World film is due out in 2025, so I guess it's a good thing that they're currently in talks with David Leitch, the director of Bullet Train and many more films, to direct it. I mean, y'all, announcing a movie a year out before there's a director is something. The film is supposed to launch a, quote, new Jurassic era, end quote, which seems like a contradiction in terms to me, and it might mean that Owen Thunderguns isn't going to be in it.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you had more. Next, Burns & Co. Production has gotten rights to make a movie of Jimmy Stewart's life, James Stewart. They're working with his daughter, Kelly Stewart Harcourt. You know, obviously there's Jimmy Stewart had an interesting life. He won an Oscar and then he joined the Air Corps and then he came back and he did It's a Wonderful Life. But it seems like this story will really focus on a bunch of positive stuff and be like an uplifting sort of heartwarming review of his life.
Hey, do you want more Game of Thrones? Too bad, you're getting it anyway. That's right, expect another Game of Thrones prequel spin-off series coming your way in the near future. This one is reported to focus on Aegon's Conquest, or Aegon's Conquest, as an Aegon Targaryen who united 6 kingdoms under the Iron Throne. So this happens ages before the events of the original series. Here, there will be dragons, but there will not be Jonathan, because I'm out.
I almost made a very inappropriate comment, but we keep this show fairly family friendly, so I will withhold. Are you old enough to remember Rami and Michelle's high school reunion? A story about two women who were super awkward but totally ruled their high school reunion? Well, if you are, you might be a cult fan of it, because I don't know. I watched the movie and I feel like it's a cult kind of movie. Anyhow, they're making a sequel that will probably be like the 40th high school reunion of Romy and Michelle with Mira Sorvino and Lisa Kudrow. So it's making its rounds right now. Like Alan Cummings is coming to Atlanta to do a Q&A while they reshow it. So that's super interesting.
Huh. Well, following the delightful Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem animated film is an upcoming animated series launching on Paramount Plus this summer, and it's called Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and, like Mutant Mayhem, it comes out of Seth Rogen's studio. There's a teaser trailer that's out now, and it has much of the same charm and humor as the film, but with a noticeable step down in animation quality.
That's super cool. Okay, next, it's about Ding Dang Time. In 2025, we are going to, or maybe I guess in 2026, we're going to have a new category at the Oscars, which is Best Achievements in Casting. It's really about time that casting directors kind of get nods for the work they do. It is long and hard, like now being in the acting world, it's long and hard work. And, you know, casting makes a movie or a television show, so they definitely should be able to get their props. I know there are other awards that acknowledge them, but I'm glad that the Oscars are doing it, too.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's 30 seconds or less, but if I may
digress
just a bit. Yeah, you can tell because there are films out there where, you know, the casting was so difficult that the film famously had to recast someone after things got started, because even during casting, you might think, oh, all the pieces are there, only to find out when you're actually shooting the film that, oh, the pieces don't fit together the way I thought. So that happened on Back to the Future. It happened on the Lord of the Rings movies. Like, casting directors have a very tough job. And when they do their job well and you get an incredible ensemble, that can really turn a film into something truly special.
Yeah. And if you, sorry, and maybe we should have put this in the conversation part. You know, part of my job as an actor is continued education. Like, you should always be working. And if you're not working on a project, you should be doing education. You should be practicing your acting. You should be taking classes. You should be doing workshops and connecting with casting directors. So I sit on a lot of workshops and calls and like lectures from casting directors. I listen to them speak a lot. And the numbers that they have to go through, like if you figure they'll get like tens of thousands of submissions for a role, like less if it's a very specific role, but you know, for a generic role of like a nurse two, right? They have to cast that, and they might get tens of thousands of submissions. And from that, they might have to pick hundreds of people, and then they have to watch all those people and knock it down to less. And then they have to deal with the people who say they're going to audition, but don't put stuff in. It's a lot of work, and they work all the time.
And on top of that, they also have to deal with studio politics, right? Because there are times where the casting director might say, oh, I've seen an audition that's perfect for this part. But the studio is like, no, we want someone who's bankable, right? Yeah. We want someone who's a box office draw. And even if they're not right for the movie, they're the one that you have to cast. Like, it's just there's so many different elements that they have to deal with.
Yeah. And they have to fit within budgets. And that's hard, too, because you want to make sure that you're making both the actors and the studios are getting a fair deal. And while they may not set those budgets, you know, that's a lot of work. Anyhow, they deserve it. I'm super excited. I know that a lot of casting directors have been wanting this for a while. A lot of actors have been wanting this for a while. So I'm super, super excited.
Okay, well, I apologize for completely derailing that 30 seconds, but we still got some more, so here's the next one. So we got a trailer for an upcoming horror film called Late Night with the Devil, and it tells the story of a fictional late night talk show that makes the very poor decision of bringing on an apparently possessed young woman who belonged to a satanic cult on the show, and then hilarity ensues. The trailer evokes a sort of early 1970s feeling. I know it's supposed to be set in 77, but it feels early 70s to me. And it comes to theaters on March 22nd, and I did not make Ariel watch it.
Thank you. I trust you if you say it's one I could handle or not. But thank you.
I think you probably could, but it was, you know, I didn't feel the need to inflict it on you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I love the one that you did inflict on me this week.
well that one was so dumb, but we'll get to it.
Yes, for sure. Sure. So sometimes life imitates art and art imitates life. And I'm asking myself if Christian Bale is actually Batman, because right now he is building 12 foster homes in California to help children who don't have other homes stay together with their siblings and also get prepared for moving into the real world. He credits his father, who is very big into philanthropic works. And I think it's pretty cool.
That is really cool. Good for him. All right. This is going to sound familiar, but just stick with me. We got a trailer for an upcoming horror film called Night Shift. This is not the 1982 Night Shift with Henry Winkler. This one stars Phoebe Tonkin as Gwen Taylor, a young woman who takes on a gig as a night shift manager of a creepy motel. But then she finds out the motel is way more than just creepy because threats, supernatural and otherwise, begin to pop up. It looks really atmospheric. The trailer has a 1970s vibe to it. What is going on? And I didn't make Ariel watch this one either.
I feel bad for making you watch these alone now. Like, it's, the grass is always greener on the other side.
I love horror movies, though, so yeah. It doesn't bother me. I also think you could handle this one, honestly, but it was one of those things where it's like, I don't want to load our whole rundown with horror movie trailers.
I appreciate that. You know, honestly, I was debating on if I watched The Shining, because I do feel like that is a horror movie that I need to watch just for cultural significance. Whether I should do the Kubrick movie or I should watch the television miniseries.
You should watch the Kubrick movie. Do not watch the television one.
That's less
it
scary.
Is so bad.
Okay. But it's closer to the book from what I understand.
Yes, it's closer to the book, but that doesn't make it good. Just because it's closer to what Stephen King wrote doesn't mean it's good.
Awesome.
The kid in the TV series, oh my, I could not stand him.
Gotcha. We'll see. There are certain movies that are hard for me to watch. I know this is 30 seconds or less for failing, because I know like The Shining will be hard for me to watch beyond the subject matter, because I know how crappy Kubrick was to the act. Oh God, Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, famously horrible to her.
Yeah, which, you know, there are some actors who are method who don't mind being brought to a place, but that should be a conversation with a director and an actor. It should be like a consensual sort of a thing. It's, you know, like Hopper from Stranger Things was talking on a Hot Ones thing. Like, if he's going to be mad at somebody, he wants to get mad at them. He doesn't stay mad at them, but like, he wants that emotion to be real. That's a very method actor thing. But he had buy-in with his co-actors on it who were like, yeah, I'm cool getting there with you and then stepping away. You know, what Kubrick did was abuse, and that's not okay.
Yeah. There were a lot of filmmakers in the 70s who were extremely cavalier in how they would get their actors to be in the right place emotionally. I mean, you'll hear stories about directors who did things like fire prop guns near their actors in order to get them unsettled. If you ever read what the actress at the beginning of Jaws, there's an actress, a character who swims out into the ocean, and she's the first one to get attacked by the shark. And you never really see the shark, but you see what happens to her. If you hear about how they achieve the effects of her getting jerked around in the water, it sounds like something that would qualify as torture. So yeah, I totally get the reticence to watch The Shining, knowing the kind of trauma that was visited upon actors in order to get the performances.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you never want to know how the sausage is made. You know, I would have issues. I would have a silly, I don't know. It's probably not silly. I would have issues watching Apocalypse Now because of one of the scenes that they filmed and knowing that it's real.
You're talking about an animal death scene.
Yes. Even though now understanding kind of the situation behind it, it's a little less horrific, but it's still horrific to me. I wouldn't want to watch it, right? Like watching The Crow, which I love the movie The Crow, but knowing that Brandon Lee got shot and killed in that movie makes it a lot harder to watch. So
yeah. Well, we still got a couple more 30 seconds or less that we got to go through, and then maybe we'll actually have discussions that we intended to be discussions.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of horror movies, Ghostbusters is getting a popcorn bucket that is not as creepy as the Dune popcorn bucket. I'll let you guess which one I think is a horror movie.
I have not seen either of these popcorn buckets, so I don't even know what you're talking about.
So the AMC does these themed popcorn buckets, and like for Dungeons and Dragons, it was a D20, which is really cool. Some of our friends actually took them and turned them into like lighting fixtures or whatnot. For Dune, there's an entire SNL skit about it. It's a sandworm coming out and you reach into the sandworm's mouth to a hole in the sandworm's mouth to get the popcorn. And it's really inappropriate. After Midnight does a bunch of jokes about it as well. And then the new one for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is a ghost trap. So the actual bucket is like the beam coming out of the ghost trap with the popcorn in that. It looks really cool. I'm actually probably going to buy one of these, regardless of how I feel about the movie, which I'm excited to watch. But even if I weren't, I would be buying one of these because it's just too cool.
I got too much junk in my house. I cannot get more junk, but let's move on. So finally, Sony is making life harder on anime fans. The company is sunsetting the Funimation streaming service in April, and they're merging it into Crunchyroll. But more than that, Funimation users who had purchased streaming titles are going to lose access to those streaming titles in this merger because Crunchyroll does not have a similar service. So these digital copies that they were supposed to be able to own, quote unquote, forever are going away because forever doesn't last that long, I guess. Plus, they'll have to pay more because Sony plans to hike Crunchyroll subscription fees starting next year. Ouch.
Yeah, that is ouch indeed. And finally, we're at our end of 30 seconds or 10 minutes or less.
Yeah, depending on the topic. And now we can talk about the stuff what we put aside for the actual episodes. One of which is that, so we're recording this the weekend of The Superb Owl, which is going to come out and tell us whether or not we have six more weeks of winter on Sunday.
I thought it told us whether we had six more weeks of football.
Yeah, maybe you're right, Ariel. Yeah, so we're talking about the big game, right? The big game or The Superb Owl that typically is marked by a couple of things. Usually it's a disappointing football game and a whole bunch of commercials. And one of the things we've been keeping an eye on is rumored ads that we might see, like movie trailers that we may very well see as the game plays out. These include there's a suspected Deadpool 3 trailer that would play, a trailer for Wicked, maybe a trailer for Quiet Place, but we did get a Quiet Place trailer already online, and perhaps some other trailers coming out as well. But again, like some of these trailers have come out this week, and sometimes that happens, right? Sometimes we get like stuff coming out before the Super Bowl comes out because apparently now it's good to have Super Bowl ads shown before the Super Bowl even I don't understand how it all works, but yeah, it once again, it looks like we're going to get a lot of different geeky movie trailers, plus all the other silly and not so silly commercials that come out on your typical Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to avoid them. I know that there's a Patrick Stewart, Hey Arnold commercial out there and I haven't watched it yet. Cause I'm like, they're going to show this during the Super Bowl. And even though it's been out well before, I want to watch it during the Super Bowl when I watch the Super Bowl. Cause I sometimes like watching football games if it's a good game. But there was one commercial I watched last night that popped up on YouTube. It was a Groundhog Day Lay's commercial. Have you seen this, Jonathan?
No, I don't watch commercials, Ariel.
Well, I watch them on YouTube. I choose to watch them. And also, like, a lot of streaming services are putting in commercials now into, like, their lowest tier of subscription. And
That's true. And you can't avoid that, right? Like, it's Amazon does it, Peacock does it, sure.
Yeah, so I understand that that sucks for a lot of people who don't want commercials. But also, if you want a lower cost of watching your show and they aren't making money, this is a way for them to try to keep that going. So lower cost equals commercials. That's just how you fund a television. It stinks, but like, I'm not surprised and I'm not mad, honestly. But I also audition for commercials. So, you know, I opted to watch this one on YouTube. It was a Lay's did a Groundhog Day commercial with Stephen Tobolowsky, who was in Groundhog's Day.
Yes. Yes.
And I was like, oh no, this is a Super Bowl commercial. I can't watch it. It's not, it came out on Groundhog's Day, but it's like a 3-minute commercial because it just keeps happening over and over with each time with a different Lay's flavor. And it's him in a grocery store checking out with the grocery attendant. And it's very funny, is what I'll
say. Does he say Bing?
He might. I don't know. He's playing like Murray's type of character in it.
Right.
But it's delightful. I would suggest watching that commercial. It was fun. But I was really afraid turning it on that it was a Super Bowl commercial. But I thought it was funnier that it came out on Groundhog's Day to celebrate Groundhog's Day.
So we'll keep an eye out, because obviously we'll probably talk about some of these trailers in the next episode of Large Neutron Collider. Like I definitely want to see the Deadpool 3 trailer. The closer we get to Wicked being a thing, the less excited I am about it. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm a little curious about it, but I don't know. I'm not getting a super good feeling about the Wicked film. I mean, the fact that they decided to divide it into two movies really bugs me.
Yeah, because the stage play isn't long enough to be two movies, is it?
No, but The Hobbit wasn't long enough to be three movies, and they still did it.
That's true. That's true. That makes me less excited. Also, the hit or miss with movie musicals, turning musicals into movies, like, it's hard to get that same magic. It's not impossible, but it is hard.
Yeah, you can, like, for every Little Shop of Horrors, which I think, like, you can argue it's a very campy movie, and it is, but I think it's a successful movie musical. For every one of those, you end up with something like Rent, which was not a success, or Mean Girls, which recently came out, and a lot of people who are fans of the stage musical absolutely hated it. I, for the record, I have not seen the film version. I've seen some of the musical numbers that were released as YouTube videos, and I was not a fan. But again, sometimes you just say, you know what? This was really better suited for a different medium, and there just was no need to transport it to this one. And that's why it doesn't work.
Yeah. I feel like, especially with stuff like Mean Girls, again, which I haven't seen as well, but some of those, you have to lean into the camp in a way that you normally wouldn't on camera, because it becomes less believable. But like the musicals that I think really hit the mark are things like Little Shop of Horrors or Producers or ABC's Once Upon a Mattress with Tracy Ullman.
Or Cats, you know. Cats really
The PBS version of Cats, the PBS version of Into the Woods, and the PBS version of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, those are all fine.
The film version of Cats leaned super hard into the camp, and it turns out you can make that mistake too.
Yeah, but they put buttholes on the cats.
No, they didn't. There is not a butthole edit. What they did was they put buttholes in the cast. There were a couple of buttholes in that cast. James Corden. So
the PBS version of Cats I watched ad nauseum, which was just a recorded stage version, basically. Watched that nonstop. I love recorded stage versions of shows, even if they end up being a different experience from actually going to see it in person. It's just, it's really cool.
I like them. It's weird when I watch a filmed version of a stage production where they take advantage of being able to have different camera angles and stuff, because that actually takes me out of it. Because I'm like, I have never been in a theater where they just let me get up out of my seat and run across to the other side of the theater and sit down in a new seat and watch the theater stage from that side.
I have been, but I was the stage manager at the time.
And there was no one watching the show? I mean, come on.
I mean, there were. So didn't run around the stage, but would run around backstage to another seat and sit on the other seat from the wings.
Well, like, yeah, I did that as an actor multiple times. That doesn't really count. Okay, tell you what. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about Avatar The Last Airbender. You mentioned that you were looking forward to this, and we even got a little bit of an additional tease of the upcoming Netflix series, the live action remake of Avatar The Last Airbender, which I still say looks like it's pretty faithful to the original source material and also looks charming.
It does. And like, I liked Avatar The Last Airbender. I'm not as huge of a fan as, let's say, like your partner is. But I really liked it. And when I watched these little clips of these trailers, I just feel like I'm watching a yes and version of the cartoon in the best way. Like, the characters feel very true to the characters in the cartoon, and they look similar. But it doesn't feel like they're being campy or cartoonish. And this latest trailer shows, I think her name is Gran-Gran. she's the grandmother of the Water Tribe, talking about Aang, and we get to see a little bit more of his personality. And I just think it's all spot on. I'm very excited. I hope this does well. The other day on TikTok, I saw Daniel Day Kim read thirst tweets about his Fire Nation character. He was also on Lost, but it took me to watching that thirst tweet TikTok video to realize that he was the same actor. And it was very funny because, like, one of them was like, I would let him burn me. And he's like, well, that's the point. Because yeah. He's the villain. He's from the Fire Nation. So the cast, kind of like with One Piece, the cast all looks like they're having a lot of fun with it. And I like the little behind the scenes peeks that Netflix is giving us. Because you want a show to be as fun to make as it is to watch, or vice versa. So,
I will say, like, the bits I've seen, especially with Aang, make it look like he's genuinely having a good time. And if he's not, he's a very good actor to make it appear that he is. Like, it just, again, it kind of comes across as that wide-eyed, ready for adventure kind of spirit that you would associate with the character, and it really is coming through, at least in these trailers and teasers. And it kind of comes back around to that earlier discussion we had about how casting directors have a really important job, because if they had picked different actors, you might not have gotten that same sort of spirit to come through in the performance. And again, I'm judging things on trailers and teasers, and it's the job of the people who cut the trailers to get the best possible stuff to represent the series to convince people to watch it. So maybe when I see the series, I won't feel the same way. But based on everything I've seen so far, it's been really encouraging.
Yeah. Based on what you've seen so far of the new Shogun TV series, what do you think of that?
I haven't watched it because you wrote long in the notes and I was running out of time. So I skipped it.
Gotcha. So FX is making a television show called Shogun, which, if that sounds familiar, it's because there was, I think, an old movie or television show called Shogun.
Yes, I believe so.
It looks beautiful. The sneak peek is like 5 minutes long, maybe longer. So it is a long sneak peek. The showrunner, Justin Marks, says that the core theme of the show is agency and control over the path of one's fate. But this is another one where listening to the actors talk about the experience of making it and the importance of making it and of all of these cultures like coming together and finding understanding is really cool. I don't think I watched the old Shogun, but I am very much looking forward to this one. I hope they do a really good job of it.
I saw the pictures and the, you know, the art direction, the costuming, that kind of stuff looks really, really good. So while I have not yet watched the first look, which, you know, maybe 1/20th of the entire thing, I did take a look and scrolled through and looked at some of the images and stuff and read up on some of the things. So it does definitely look like it'll be it looks to me like the kind of thing that's been cared for. Like, there's been a lot of attention to detail, right? Not something that's just sort of thrown together. Sometimes I get a little antsy about these kinds of projects because so often the version we get here in America is sort of the white savior kind of approach, right? Like, it's Tom Cruise who's there to show all these samurai how they can be real good at what they do. And I'm like, this doesn't feel good.
Which was my concern with this too, but it doesn't feel like that's going to be the case. I think it's a white reporter who goes to Japan, I think. I've been reading a lot of stuff this week, so my brain is not retaining it all. I hope it's not a white savior story. It doesn't feel like that from the, there are additional trailers about it that are not 5 minutes long if you are so inclined at some point.
Yeah, I will definitely check at least one of those out. Next up, we've got a story about Xbox, and it's from Kotaku, and the Kotaku piece is largely kind of talking about a particular subculture of Xbox fans, like the hardcore Xbox, like devoted. They're essentially referred to in the piece as like a cult, and these are the kind of folks who they don't like any deviation from suggesting that Xbox is the end all be all of video games, or at least console video games. And I have met people who are like that, both in the Xbox camp or the PlayStation camp or the Nintendo camp, or sometimes, you know, like people joke PC Master Race, like that's a whole reference to that kind of cult. Personally, I'm like, whatever console's got the title and is fun to play, that's what I like. But the whole point of the story is that Xbox is looking to potentially take some titles that used to be Xbox exclusive and to open them up for other platforms. And apparently some people in these groups are like, this is gonna be the end of Xbox. You're giving away exclusivity and now Xbox doesn't mean anything. And I'm just like, grow up.
yeah. I guess I could have picked a more impartial article on it to talk about, but I do think it's important to also kind of acknowledge that there are people who are super exclusive about stuff like that. And honestly, I prefer things that are cross-platform.
Me too. And I mean, we also understand, like, Microsoft just recently acquired Activision Blizzard, and part of that acquisition was Microsoft bending over backwards to promise that it wasn't going to turn all the Activision Blizzard titles into Xbox exclusives that would not run on other platforms. Otherwise, they were not going to be allowed to have that acquisition go through. So in some ways you can say, like, well, Microsoft has an incentive to make sure they're not locking everything behind exclusivity. Yeah. And I get how exclusive titles can make a console seem superior or special. I understand that, but like you, Ariel, I much prefer things that are cross-platform so that I can play on whichever platform I prefer, as opposed to being forced to stick with a specific platform if I want to experience that particular title.
And I know some people prefer Xbox because they don't like some of the things that PlayStation has done, like with Sony and taking digitally bought media off, and you know, they almost made it unavailable, we talked about earlier. So
yeah, well, and I don't like, I just don't like the PlayStation controllers very much. Like, they, I don't find them comfortable to hold. I prefer the Xbox controllers, and that's it. Like, it's not that it's not that I think PlayStation it gives poorer performance. I don't believe that at all. I think PlayStation is a phenomenal machine when it comes to performance. I just don't like their controllers.
Yeah, yeah. I do prefer Xbox controllers to PlayStation controllers, personally, as well. But that's partially because that's just what I'm more familiar with.
I like them. I like them because they're easier on my knuckles.
Gotcha. Oh, wait, you let your echidnas play with your controllers, your game controllers?
No, but I like to set up stupid segues.
For a maybe stupid show?
Maybe, yeah. So we got a trailer for a series that's coming out on Paramount Plus for Knuckles. It's obviously a spinoff from the Sonic movies. And with Idris Elba voicing the character. And this is one of those trailers we heard was going to be shown with the Superb Owl, but I didn't know it at the time, and I just threw it in the lineup. I think the trailer looks like it's not for me. I have no interest in watching it, but at the same time, didn't think it was a bad trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. I said stupid maybe because it fit into the line of conversation. It actually looked a little cute to me. It kind of looked better to me than the Sonic movies. And I haven't watched them, but the trailer looked better than the Sonic movie trailers to me. So
yeah. Well, and I've heard like from lots of people that the Sonic movies are pretty entertaining and it's folks that I trust, but like you, I haven't seen them. It's again, just like I haven't seen the Mario movie. Like I didn't feel, maybe it's because I don't have kids, but I didn't feel the pull to go see these. And I feel like these are movies that would really appeal to like a family. Let's say that you've got like maybe a 10 or 11 year old. That's the kind of movie that you might go and check out. But as someone who has only an 8 year old dog who isn't even allowed in a movie theater, I haven't gone to see it.
You see, that's why he's barking. He was barking outside at the beginning of the episode.
Because I haven't taken him to see Mario or Sonic.
Yes, that is exactly why. I don't have, but he's being quiet now. So we should next talk about the trailer for A Quiet Place Day One.
Yes, that's where Tybalt is right now. He's in A Quiet Place.
No, I hope A Quiet Place, not the A Quiet Place.
No, yeah, not the A Quiet Place. Yeah, so we got a teaser for A Quiet Place Day One. And obviously this is another entry into the Quiet Place series. This one being telling the story of what was happening the day that the alien menace came to Earth and began to absolutely wreck shop as far as humanity is concerned. And I thought the trailer looked pretty intense and interesting. I've only seen clips of the first A Quiet Place, 'cause I never sat down to watch the whole thing. And maybe someday I will, because the bits I saw were interesting. I had some issues, 'cause you know, it was just movie logic stuff that shouldn't bother me, but my brain is stupid, so sometimes it does. But it's still, I could recognize that, oh, there's a lot of care that went into making this. And this looks like it's a much bigger scale movie. Because obviously in A Quiet Place, the original one, fairly small cast, not a bunch of huge set pieces. But this one obviously has to have some big set pieces to show the devastation that happens when the aliens first hit.
Yeah, I watched the first Quiet Place and I enjoyed it. Plot logicals aside, right? Because I can watch a movie and just enjoy it and then think about it later and be like, that's dumb. That's how I watched Titanic.
yeah.
But I didn't watch the second one, not out of lack of interest, just I haven't gotten around to it. A Quiet Place Day One, the trailer feels very like, it feels like Cloverfield to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
But I probably will not watch A Quiet Place Day One because it starts off with the main character carrying around a kitty cat. And that's just.
And you don't see the kitty cat after that moment.
You do. You do.
Okay.
She's like in a bunker or a tunnel or something like that with another person and she's holding the cat. But there are definitely scenes where you don't see it, which means that my pet anxiety will be all over the board.
Let me tell you this, Ariel, you do not want to watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Okay.
Because there's a kitty cat who meets an unfortunate fate.
Okay.
Kitty cat introduced in episode one. Kitty cat not in the end of episode eight.
Gotcha. Look, I watched the second season of Wheel of Time as a group watch with my friends, which I never read the books and it was very hard to follow. But there was also some animal cruelty in that. And I yelled at my friends for not warning me.
I was really upset at the series.
Okay.
Because I felt that it was a very cheap thing to do. And at the same time, it was like, it also illustrates, you remember I mentioned that one of the characters sort of has sociopathic tendencies. Mm-hmm. I would argue it sort of reinforces that because this character who is the owner of said cat is upset, but not devastated. And I'm like, y'all, if anything ever happens to one of my pets, I am inconsolable.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to go hug my three little fur balls when I'm done with this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think the trailer for Quiet Place Day One, I mean, it looks intense and it looks like it looked like it's well made. Like, I mean, obviously I don't know enough about the story, but it definitely looks like it's going to be a pretty incredible experience if you go and see it in a theater.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you feel about the teaser for Moana 2?
Not much, because there's not much to the teaser. You see a silhouetted Moana with a conch shell on a beach, and she blows into the conch shell, and then it shows the title card for Moana 2, and then you hear presumably Maui making a laughing noise, and then it's over, and it tells you it's coming out in November. The thing that was surprising to me was that I had not heard anything about a Moana sequel until that teaser came out.
Yeah, I feel like I might have heard speculation, and it completely left my brain after I heard it. Do I think there needs to be a Moana 2? Eh.
I don't know that there needs to. Okay. I think there's two opinions I have about whether or not there needs to be. From a story element, I don't think there needs to be one at all. From a Disney is in trouble because their movies have been sucking recently and they're having a real issue with box office, I think Disney absolutely needs a Moana 2.
But is that the right path to go? Shouldn't they do something better but more original?
I mean, they tried and no one went to see those movies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. What was it? It's not Strange New Worlds, because that's the Star Trek
Strange
one.
Worlds.
Strange Worlds. Strange Worlds, like, came out and no one saw it.
They also didn't advertise it well.
That's true. But the point being that, you know, Disney has tried a couple of things and hasn't seen a lot of success. Like, you got to consider that Disney's, like, not done great with Star Wars. They're flagging with Marvel. And there are a lot of reasons for this, I think. I think a big part of it is that they've turned into kind of an assembly line for movies, where they're churning things out faster than they have time to make sure they're good, especially from a story perspective, story and characters perspective. They're just not doing the job there. And a lot of the stuff that they're offering in the animation department just hasn't. Wish is another great example. Wish was a new film that didn't do great for Disney either. But then a lot of people I know who saw it said it was just mediocre. Yeah. So.
Elemental apparently was great, but it was mismarketed as well.
Well, because it just felt like it was a mix between Inside Out and Zootopia to me. Right.
Yeah.
All the ads made it feel like it was a combination of those two movies. And then we got Inside Out 2 coming out. I don't think anyone's necessarily excited yet about that. Maybe they will be when we get some more trailers.
My niece and nephews are, but
yeah, well, you can tell them that Bing Bong or whoever is still dead. So
Jonathan,
you can't be upset that a character that never existed dies. Like, he was imaginary to start with. He never lived. So
I don't know. Ryan Reynolds in his If movie might disagree with you.
Yeah, but that's different mythology. So anyway, I don't know. I'm not excited about Moana 2 necessarily. Like, I don't really feel a desire to see it. The fact that it's going to theaters says something, because it's at least not a return to the era where Disney started to churn out those direct-to-video sequels that were so low quality. I'm glad it's not that. But like I said, I can understand from a corporate perspective why they would go to that well again, because they're desperate to find something that hits. From what I understand, the one element of Disney that is consistently doing pretty well is the parks, and everything else is kind of in sort of the doldrums right now. So, I also will say that someone was making another combination of how Moana's coming out the same day as something else, in November. And I cannot remember now what the other film is, but I remember that someone was trying to do the same sort of thing as Barbie and Oppenheimer, where you had the Barbenheimer, and their version of the combined was MOANED, which just spells moaned. And they're like, no, that is not good.
No. God, is it Wicked?
Yes. It's Wicked and Moana. So it just came out as moaned.
Oh gosh. Oh my God. Oh no. No.
Yeah, not good.
Nope. You know, but I get that Disney does sequels of well-done things. I don't know why they're doing Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey too.
Well, obviously that's not Disney, but
that's not Disney, no.
So here's what's crazy. All right. Like, you can tell there is a giant jump forward in production value in the sequel.
Yes. I was going to say the same thing. Like, I was like, well, it looks like it's better made.
It looks like it's a real movie, right? The first Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey just looked like a super, it looked like what it was, which was a super duper cheap slasher film taking advantage of an IP that was in the public domain. And that's it. Like, they were exploiting an intellectual property that they could exploit and then hope that that would carry it. It was very much an Asylum Pictures kind of move. The trailer that we got for Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 doesn't make it look good. It does not look like a good movie, mind you, but it definitely looks like they got a much bigger budget for this one.
Yeah, I agree. Everything I've heard from the first movie is that it wasn't good. It was not good at all.
I mean, the trailer convinced me of that. Before, yeah. I didn't need to see the film to get that implication.
But it wasn't even like bad good or like Sharknado good.
Well, Sharknado wasn't good either. But
okay,
yeah.
Sorry, I meant Tommy Wiseau's Shark good, which also probably is not good because he's trying to bank on the bizarreness of The Room, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, just The Room is a great example of a bad movie that's still wildly entertaining because you're spending the entire time, at least the first time you see it, you spend the entire time saying, wait, what? Over and over again. Like I could not help myself but ask questions out loud when I saw it the first time in a theater that had other people in it.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. This is not in our show notes at all, but yeah, I noticed Tommy Wiseau made another one, Shark. Maybe we talked about it last week. Anyhow.
I think we mentioned it offhand at one point.
Yeah. Like, it's not even that level of like, oh, this was bad, good, and people like it, so I'm going to do it again. Maybe it is. It doesn't feel the same.
I'm honestly just surprised that Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2 got a budget. Like what it apparently did. Cause when you watch that trailer, it really does look like a real movie, like a quote unquote real movie. Yeah. Whereas the first one just didn't.
Yeah. Oh, and they introduced Tigger, in this one.
Yeah.
So that's a big plot point.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, if you want to, I mean, I think you can just watch the trailer and then you're good. I mean, if you have a burning desire to see this movie, let me stop you. There's no reason, like, love what you love, right? I'm not going to judge you for it. But it certainly didn't do anything in the trailer that made me say, oh, well, now I want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't affect you the same way that the trailer for The Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin did.
Yeah. No, that I wanted to see as soon as the trailer started. I wanted to see this series. So it's coming out on Apple TV and it's coming out in March and it stars Noel Fielding, whom I always associate with The Mighty Boosh. Like that was a show that he co-launched many years ago, but he's also been on The Great British Bake Off. He's been on Taskmaster.
IT Crowd.
He was the weird guy behind the red door or the green door or whatever it was.
The closet goth.
Yeah. He was the goth. Noel Fielding is a very funny, very strange comedian from England. Mm-hmm. And he plays this 18th century highway or would be highwayman named Dick Turpin, who leads a hapless gang as they attempt to rob rich people, mostly from what we can tell in the trailer, unsuccessfully. Looks really funny. There's a lot of other English comedy actors who are in this that you might recognize if you've watched a lot of English comedy. My favorite being Mark Heap, who is playing Dick Turpin's dad. Mark Heap played Brian, the tortured artist, in the series Spaced, which was the first big creative outlet of Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, and Nick Frost working together. Mm-hmm. And Mark Heap is he's delightful. I love seeing him and stuff, so I'm so excited. And yeah, I watched this trailer and I'm just like, man, March can't get here soon enough. I am so glad I haven't canceled my Apple TV subscription yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I So I wasn't always a fan of the Mighty Boosh. This has much better production quality. It's really, but it gives me like Briscoe County Junior vibes.
Sure. Yeah.
Like it's super tongue in cheek. I am very interested in it. Anything that has like a, it's later period than Robin Hood, but sort of got that merry man quality to it. I'm super excited.
It reminds me a bit about Blackadder season 3, but obviously much higher production value.
Yeah, I could see that. And I feel like Noel Felding's band of like his gang are also very comedic, but not quite as much, so it'll be a good foil to his bizarreness.
Yeah, there's at least one character who appears to be although presenting as female, she will be the straight man.
Yeah. I don't know if it was my friends who did this or if they heard it somewhere, but I've heard Noel Felding compared to as like the creepy uncle in Great British Bake Off, but he's such a friendly creepy.
Yeah, it's also funny because occasionally with some of the lines he does in Dick Turpin, you can hear some of his characters from Mighty Boosh creep in. Like, he's got a character, the Hitcher. He's a hitchhiking kind of demonic character from the Mighty Boosh, and who's an over-the-top Cockney character. You can almost hear a little bit of that voice creeping in to some of the performance. Yeah, totally looking forward to that. Can't wait for it to come out.
How do you feel about Driveaway Dolls? Because we just got a second trailer for that.
It looks good. I mean, it's a project what one of the Coen brothers is working on, and two young women come across a mysterious briefcase that at one point was owned by an obviously doomed Pedro Pascal, and it's sort of like kind of got some heist elements to it. I was telling you, Ariel, before we started recording that the briefcase is giving me serious Pulp Fiction vibes.
Yeah, definitely. I think it looks interesting. Honestly, I wasn't sure if it was a good geek thing to include other than Coen Brothers, but it does have Miss Marvel and Pedro Pascal in it. So
it looks to me like a movie that's going to have that sort of Pulp Fiction appeal. Like that's the movie I compare it to the most, because it's a big ensemble, lots of big characters doing a heightened task in this case, like, you know, who's got the briefcase and all these different people are trying to get it, which, you know, makes me think of other movies that we got fairly recently, Bullet Train being a great example of one. Mm-hmm. And I typically enjoy those movies if they're well done. Like, they have elements of farce in them. They're not necessarily played up as comedically as a traditional farce, but they have farcical elements that work their way in. And I really enjoy action films that do that. Guy Ritchie does, like, that was like his career when he first started off. They were all like this style of kind of wild movies where everybody's going after the same thing for different reasons, and no one's ever really sure who has it at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll probably watch it. I've not caught up on my Coen brother movies.
They do good work, but I haven't seen all of their work. Like there's some movies that when I saw the trailer, I was just like, okay, this looks real depressing. I think I'll skip it.
Yep. But some of their less depressing stuff I haven't seen as well. I didn't watch Fargo till a couple of years ago, the movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I enjoyed it, but.
Yeah. And our last story, I did not put a horror movie trailer at the end. Instead, I found a very weird, magically realism kind of film called The Animal Kingdom, a French film that I had never heard of. And this trailer just kind of popped up in my suggestions, and I took a look and I thought, this is different.
You know, that's what everybody said. That's what the trailer says. That's what everybody in the comments said. First of all, it looks beautiful and I want to watch it. It's really interesting. It's about kids who start becoming people hybrids. However, it's also kind of the plot of Sweet Tooth.
That's true. So in this case, you're right in that Sweet Tooth also has the oppression element to it, right? So in this trailer, the gist is that you've got this race of creatures that are these human animal hybrids, and whether they started off as human and started to kind of mutate into animals, or whether there's actually a separate race and there's just this intermingling of humans and these hybrid animal humans. It's not totally clear in the trailer. It appears that one of the protagonists in the trailer is a father, a human father, who fell in love with a woman who is one of these animal human hybrids. And his son, who's a teenager, appears to be a teenager, maybe a young adult, appears to not necessarily know that, and then finds out. And then his son is starting to undergo a kind of transformation. So it's not really clear to me whether there's like two separate races that are just genetically compatible, or if this is where certain people are transforming for an unknown reason. But what is clear is that mainstream human society despises these hybrids. They fear them. They consider them other. They want to either enslave or wipe them out. And so the story that we're seeing unfolds across that background, and it looks like it's a pretty powerful story.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to it. I wish my French was better so I didn't have to read the subtitles, because I know that'll distract from the beautifulness of the cinematography and special effects.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm like, I would much rather read the subtitles than to have someone do a dubbed version, because dubbed ones just distract me way more.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I started watching Squid Games. I'm only a couple of episodes in because I cannot, like, I have to be in the right mood to watch it. It's like, so the concept is upsetting to me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But it's super well done. It's another one of those that I feel like I'm to understand culturally, I should watch it. The dubbing on that, the acting is great, but the dubbing definitely did take some getting used to.
Yeah. Yeah. Squid Game, I can see why you would need to take breaks between episodes, because it's heavy stuff. I mean, like, just the action that unfolds in your typical episode can be hard to watch. Mm-hmm. But then on top of it, you have this ongoing commentary that's really about things like the wealth gap and classism and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's super heavy too. So very, like you said, very well done. I don't blame anyone who takes their time watching that. Like, that was a series that I could not easily binge, because it was that level of, you know, somewhat harrowing. I needed to take them maybe I might watch like two episodes on a good day, but then I would take a break and pick it back up a day or two later for the same reason.
Yeah. Well, that is all the stories we have to talk about. It was a very meandering episode, and also, double checking here, a little long. Not too bad.
No, not as long as last week's episode.
No. But thank you for going on the journey with us. Jonathan, if they want to reach out to us to talk about the Superb Owl trailers and commercials they saw, or to share excitement about any of the upcoming awesome geeky things happening, how would they do that?
So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to go out there, and you're going to have to really study game theory and understand exactly what makes games really intriguing and attractive. And then I need you to develop a game specifically for squids. It's going to be your squid game, and you're going to create really fun elements. You want it to be attractive. You want the graphics to really appeal to your typical squid. You want to have some game elements where, like, tentacles are really going to be important, because you want to cater to your audience, right? And then once you've gotten to a point where you feel really good about your concept, and you've worked up, say, a prototype version of your game, you're going to launch that on a crowdfunding site like BackerKit or Kickstarter or Indiegogo, something like that. Now, it's going to be tough for you, because you are promoting a game specifically for squid, who notoriously are not big crowdfunders. but you're going to launch that campaign and you're going to see that your very first backer who will be backing at the support, but not actually purchasing a version of the game level for, so we're talking like $5, is me. And I'm going to leave a comment and it's like, hey, you got any questions? You can ask me then.
Interesting. Interesting. And if you've got a cephalopod allergy or if programming is just Greek to you, then you can reach out to us on social media. We are Large Neutron Collider on Instagram and Facebook and Discord and Threads, and on X/Twitter. We are LNC_podcast. You can also get the link to our Discord on our website, www.largeneutroncollider.com. That is up to date prior to this episode now. And if you want to send us a longer form message, you can do so. Our email is largeneutroncollider. Oh, nope, it is not. Our email is largeneutronpod@gmail.com, I think.
Who knows, really?
Who knows, really? We always love hearing from you, and we love chatting with you and hearing what you're excited about. So thanks to the people who write in. And even if you don't, we still appreciate you, our shy friends.
Yes.
And until next time, I have been Ariel, Tigger's Love to Bounce, Kasten.
And I have been Jonathan, I am allergic to squid, Strickland.
That's why you didn't purchase the game, right?
Yeah, no, because I can't, listen, I can't go back to the hospital again, Ariel. I've been there so many times.
Thank you. Thank you for taking care of yourself.
I'm done. The Large Neutron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.